Please join me in prayer. Amen. So I have to tell you, all week long I've been worrying about this sermon, worrying about how you're going to talk about art, beauty, in a week that was marked by such ugliness. And I have to tell you, it's caused me to kind of reevaluate or at least check back in with why we thought this series, Artsy Summer, was going to be a good idea. I mean, when we first started it a few months ago, I think, it was my sense that the year has been so hard, so heavy, so much in the political and public sphere arena had just been bombarding us that it was nice, it might be fun to have a summer where we just sort of did things a little more lighthearted, a little more fun, see some movies and play with crayons. And yet the events of the day have caught back up with me. Current events make it hard to wonder whether it makes sense to keep talking about Artsy Summer. And I've been thinking about it. How does this matter? How does this talk we've been doing about imagination and creativity, how does it matter in the great moral questions of the day? And then, oddly enough, the president figured it out for me. He said in a series of tweets earlier in the week, he said, "Sad to see the history and culture of our great country being ripped apart with the removal of our beautiful statues and monuments. The beauty that is being taken out of our cities, towns, and parks will be greatly missed and never able to be comparably replaced." When I first saw that, I was brought up short. These statues, this debate we're having, are they racist idols or are they civic icons? Should we remove them? Should we keep them? How do we contextualize them properly so that in their place people understand what they're really about? Is that really a question of art and beauty, the way the president seemed to be saying? That removing the statues will make our cities uglier? Is that really at stake here? I mean, of all the ways to weigh in on this question, this seemed to me to be the very oddest, that the current occupant seems to think this is about art criticism, about what makes a park pretty. As if that's what we really need in this moment, an art critic. As if this is a moment for art critics. And I thought about it and I thought, well, let's take him up on that. What would an art critic say about this moment? And in my other life, I do art criticism at the university. I think about questions of what makes things truly beautiful and what real beauty is all about. Now, I have to say, if that piece of paper that's folded in half in your bulletin, you can take that out and don't unfold it yet if you don't want to ruin the surprise. But on one side of it is the image of the statue of Robert E. Lee that we're talking about. And I am not an art critic of statues. I don't have any particular opinion about this one that is formed by anything other than my personal response to it. It seems like a kind of a static and frumpy statue to me, not much of a heroic monument, but that's for art historians of statuary to say, not for me. But if it's a question of beauty, I say, let's talk about that. Let's talk about whether these statues contribute to the beauty of our cities and towns and parks, whether they will be missed if they are removed. Now, beauty includes a lot of different things. Is the image, the idea, the sound of it, whatever the art is it pleasing? Is it pleasant? That's part of it for people. Is it an imitation of nature? For a long time, philosophers have said that beauty is really, in art, is about the imitation of nature. Does this statue capture a sense of the man, Robert E. Lee, or the role of being a general of an army? Does it have harmony and proportion? Is it well designed? Does the eye move across it in a way that brings satisfaction? That's kind of my criticism, is it's kind of dumpy. It doesn't do anything. There's no movement in the statue. But I also want to tell you that there is, in the question of beauty, a kind of morality that is implied. A beautiful thing will make the world larger, not smaller. It will expand our horizons of empathy and of an understanding. Truly beautiful things never make us smaller as people, never make us more hard-hearted. Instead, true beauty will break us open and melt our hearts. And most importantly of all, to quote the poet, beauty is truth. True beauty never lies. It reveals and it discloses. Maybe it forces you to see things more complicated than you thought they were, but it's not going to obstruct or obscure or mislead. Because what deceives, what obscures, can never be truly beautiful. Now, the problem is that not everything that seems truly beautiful is. Some things can be pretty or attractive without being beautiful. The techniques of art can be used to dress up ugliness as though they were beauty. We call that propaganda. Propaganda uses the techniques of art, but betrays its fundamental purpose. Instead of capturing a deeper vision of reality, propaganda is tendentious. It biases the question. It tips the scales of the way we see reality, and it seduces the people who look at it. It makes us smaller, and it closes our minds, and it shrinks down our hearts. The techniques of art are slippery. They can serve many masters. We all know about this, the dog whistles of the election cycle we just had, the things that sounded like good rhetoric, like compelling argumentation, that were really just misleading and trickery. The lost cause ideology of the old South, this mythology of this benign economic order, is one of those pieces of propaganda. One of the greatest films ever made, I'm told by film historians, at least in terms of the impact it had on the evolution of films, was a movie called The Birth of a Nation, made in about 1915 by D.W. Griffith. I'm told it's an amazing movie. I'm told it changed the way this evolving art form worked. I've never been able to watch it. I tried once or twice. I got about 5 minutes into it, and I had to turn it off because the agenda of this movie is so ugly and is so horrifying and is so full of hatred and of the love of slavery and of the love of domination that it was great propaganda in its way, but cannot be said to be beautiful. Something that looks beautiful can hide a deeper ugliness. Something that once was beautiful can be twisted and usurped. Things that used to be noble can turn into Trojan horses in the hands of propaganda and sneak in, infiltrate ugliness into our beauty-loving systems. So how do we tell beauty from propaganda? That's part of the question, I think, with these statues. And we all have this capacity. We all have in us, in our souls, in our hearts, because we're children of God, we all have an intuition that can tell us about the ring of truth we can feel in a moment. But it's so hard to tell sometimes. And this propaganda is so tricky, that they're so good at it, that we need something outside of us that is holy and true that we can rely on. And thankfully for me, Pastor Catherine already did this work last week in her sermon, where she reminded us all that Jesus is God's logos, that Jesus is God's revelation of divine truth, that if you want to know what love looks like in human form, all you have to do is look at Jesus. And in a way, therefore, Jesus is God's artwork offered to us, so that we can have a standard of comparison, so that when we're wanting to know if something is beautiful or just attractive propaganda, we have something to compare it to. Can you recognize the love of God as revealed in Jesus in this thing, these statues? Do they show us Jesus, the revelation of divine love? Is there some way in which they resemble Christ? John says in his gospel, just a little bit later from the passage Pastor Catherine preached on last week, as you heard this morning, John writes, "This is the judgment, that the light has come into the world and people loved darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. For all who do evil hate the light and do not come into the light so that their deeds may not be exposed. But those who do what is true come into the light so that it may be clearly seen that their deeds have been done in God." John here is talking about darkness and light as lies and truth, as wickedness and goodness, but also ugliness and beauty in the deepest sense. We choose when we choose the darkness, we choose it because it's an attractive lie, because it reminds us of things we'd rather believe rather than what's true. When we choose the darkness, we choose propaganda. When we choose to believe in the darkness rather than in light, we're really choosing something that is attractively ugly rather than beautifully true. You want to talk about those statues? How would an image of Jesus be in those statues? Leading the troops to war to defend slavery? Or would it be a statue of Jesus loving and healing and liberating the enslaved and the war wounded and the oppressed? So as I ask this question about what's really beautiful and what's really going to make our cities more beautiful, what's really going to make our public spaces more beautiful, first it reminded me why it is important, in fact, to talk about art and beauty and creativity and imagination during times of public unrest. Because talking about these things helps us to be savvy about the way rhetoric and skill and craft can be used against us, and the way we can use them in creative and imaginative response. When we remember what beauty really is, it helps us to engage with the ugliness we see and not to be fooled by it, but instead to insist on real beauty. And so, should the statues come down? Well, here's what an actual art critic of statues says from an article that was in the Washington Post this week. She writes, "Almost none of the monuments that were put up right after the Civil War. Some were erected during the civil rights era of the early 1960s, which coincided with the war's centennial. But the vast majority of these monuments date between 1895 and World War I, part of a campaign to paint the Southern cause in the Civil War as just, and slavery as a benevolent institution. And their installation came against a backdrop of Jim Crow violence and the oppression of African Americans. The monuments were put up as explicit symbols of white supremacy, and I would add, as aggressive acts of propaganda." So you tell me, are they beautiful? Do they contribute to the public space? Or do they serve a system of racism and exploitation? Can they stay? Well, if we're talking about beauty, if we're talking about creativity, if we're talking about art, we have to remember that our responses need to be as creative or more creative than the tools that are being used against us. So you have that piece of paper folded in half. Don't unfold it just yet, still, but if you turn it over, on the one side is that picture of Robert E. Lee. On the other side is another statue, and I would suggest, perhaps strongly, a piece of propaganda called the Charging Bull. This is a statue that is in Wall Street, and it's a monument to the vitality of American capitalism, the vitality of our system that pulled up the world economy after World War II and flourishes. So this statue is in Wall Street. So now if you open the piece of paper on the top, you'll see another statue, something called the Fearless Girl. This was a statue that was installed in Wall Street this year in March on the eve of Women's Independence Day, the International Women's Day. A statue that in many ways testifies a whole different kind of vitality, a whole different kind of nobility, and one that I would suggest for those of us who follow Jesus comes much closer to the truth of what real beauty ought to be. But the interesting thing is, if you look at the bottom frame, the juxtaposition, the fearless girl was placed directly in the path of the charging bull. The lovers of the charging bull statue were outraged about this when it happened in March. The sculptor, who's still alive, demanded that the little girl, the fearless girl, be removed. And she was originally just supposed to be there for a little while, but the city decided to keep her, creating, sort of by accident, a whole different work of art. A whole different sense of what is beautiful, a whole different sense of what this public space is about, both its muscular vitality, but also its innocence that needs to be preserved, that needs to be protected, and that needs to stand up against the forces of greed. So maybe there's some interesting and exciting and clever things we can do to recontextualize other statues. Maybe alongside of every statue of Robert E. Lee, there needs to be a statue of a man being lynched. Not beautiful in a traditional way, but much more beautiful in terms of revealing the inner truth. Or maybe there needs to be a frieze depicting freedom marchers, civil rights marchers, even when the dogs are turned on them and the fire hose is used against them, nobly walking across those bridges, walking down those streets, over against every monument to Jefferson Davis and Nathan Bedford Forrest. That maybe, even if those images aren't the most pleasant, maybe they are far more beautiful. Maybe there's all kinds of things we can do to reveal what's really going on when this propaganda is being used against us. But I would say we start here, as I was telling the kids. As followers of Jesus, let's at least begin by insisting on this, that every time we see a depiction of greed, every time we see a depiction of exploitation, every time we encounter one of those masterful and epic distractions from God of love, every time we see propaganda marshaled in the service of domination or exploitation or deprivation, we need to recontextualize them in our own minds, at least. And we need to imagine something like this bas-relief that's above me right now. And if that doesn't work for you, imagine it differently, but something juxtaposed against what they're trying to make you love, a reminder of God's image of love as it truly is, a reminder of God's revelation of the truth, of the light that shines in the darkness, and the darkness cannot extinguish it. Love the light rather than the darkness. Recontextualize in your own mind, at least, see the image of something more noble, something more beautiful than the manipulations of this present age. An image of the heavenly kingdom, an image of God's love made flesh in the world, opening arms to welcome everyone. Amen.